Christmas Eve episode of Daft on Draft, and we are doing Daft or Draft for this Christmas Eve episode. We love these episodes. We get to get a little hot takey here. We get to get into the pundancy of all of this. We get to give our strong opinions on some controversial topics. And today we have a couple of good ones. We have one college football oriented one. We have two NFL draft-related ones, and one of them is a quarterback. But we're going to start off with the college football one. Corey is my co-host here. I can't do this alone. Yeah. The 12-team playoff is a mistake. Daft or draft?
I'm going to draft it. I do think playoff expansion is a good idea. 12 teams is way too many. I'm going to draft that 12 is too many because, like, unless you just cater to the SEC, you're always going to have people complaining, or you're going to have blowouts. Those are the two options. Those are the two options with a 12-team playoff. And I want parity, so I want Indiana in. I want SMU in. I want Boise State in. Like, I want these teams in. So I'm going to draft that 12-team playoff is a mistake, but I also think that the 12-team playoff current structure is fixable. I think it's reformable. By I'm fine with the P4 conference winners getting automatic bids. I'm fine with the at-large bids. I'm fine with the 1G5 at-large bid. Mm-hmm. Completely cool with that. Saying the four highest-ranked conference champions get a bye is absurd.
Yes.
And it puts a team like Oregon in a bind, where they're the one seed, but because Ohio State has two losses, because Tennessee has a couple losses, they have to be the 8-9 seeds, and Oregon has to play them second round while Boise State gets a bye, while Arizona State gets a bye. That Texas has to play a first round game while against Clemson, while Oregon or Boise State and Arizona State get byes. Like,
Arizona State wasn't even a playoff team until that week.
Correct. And then you give them a first round bye. So I think it's reformable. I'm cool with the at-large bids. I'm cool with the guaranteed spots for conference champions and the P4. But you have to seed it better than this. And then I think we hit on this in a previous episode too, but like, reseed the second round. Like, what's so hard about like making sure that Oregon plays the lowest seeded team in the second round?
Well, they
technically still are. Yeah, I guess. But like, yeah, that's true. I guess that doesn't change. But, like, there's no reason Ohio State should have been the 8th seed behind Arizona State, behind Boise State. Like, that's crazy. And that's where it creates a disadvantage to have. Why should Oregon have the 1 seed then? Why would they want the 1 seed in that case?
Yeah. And you don't get a home game.
No.
Which is tough as well. I do love the first round home games.
It's so much fun.
And I think it also leads to the blowouts that we saw that week. I'm going to daft this. I don't think it was a mistake. And I'm going to take a little bit of a different angle here. It's because of the Indianas and the SMUs that I want this 12 team to continue. It's because I want that 1G5 school in there. I want stories.
Yeah.
I want potential recruits to say, Indiana's in the playoffs. SMU is in the playoffs. I want these Cinderellas to happen. Mm-hmm. It's not like basketball. You're not going to see a 15 seed beat a 2 seed in college football. There's too many elements. There's too many variables that have to work together for you to be an elite team. And there's only going to be at best, four, maybe five legitimately great college football teams every year. Mm-hmm. And I think this year you're looking at Oregon, you're looking at Penn State, you're looking at Texas, you're looking at Ohio State. I mean, is Notre Dame in there maybe?
We'll see.
I
can't.
Georgia, like, what?
I want to put Notre Dame in there, but like, they have no legitimate talent at wide receiver outside of the Faison kid. And they have a quarterback who won't throw the ball beyond 4 yards.
Yeah, they just like can't really score. That's the problem. And so
you can also say the same thing about Georgia right now, too, because their receivers are terrible.
Yes.
Their offensive line is terrible, and they're on their backup quarterback.
Yes,
but even with their starting quarterback, I would also.
But they also went through the SEC and finished 11-2.
Well, they did do that too, and won the conference.
And won the conference.
Whatever,
but I will draft that they need to fix the seeding, and I think that they will immediately fix the seeding because I think they see that it is an issue. I love.
I mean, you can't look at the Oregon one seed any other way than an absolute problem.
Arizona State getting a bye is a travesty. If you want to say Boise State is one of the best, whatever, they lost one game and it was to the best team in the nation, but they are 10.5-point underdogs to Penn State. They're obviously not the better football team in anybody's eyes. So why are we putting on this facade that they are the 3 seed? Because they're not. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it even matters because they don't get a home game as the 3 seed. So what are we even doing here at this point? Mm-hmm. So for me, that's where I'm at. I'm drafting it. I love the 12 teams. Get as many teams, get as many stories as you can in there. But fix the seeding. Absolutely.
It has to be because I mean, I do think this brand, this you could keep the same 12 teams in. How much fun would it have been to see a playoff game on the blue turf?
Yeah.
How much fun would it have seemed to see a playoff game in Tempe?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think the NCAA missed a gigantic opportunity in this situation, because not only that, but like for playoff games, visitors travel. I live in Columbus, dude. I went to Trader Joe's with my son. We go to Trader Joe's every Sunday and get groceries. It's our thing. Mm-hmm. Go to Trader Joe's and get. I couldn't drive up 315, which is the main highway that cuts through the city, without seeing 13 Tennessee license plates, without seeing big burnt orange flags flying out their windows. Like, it was cool. It was really mm-hmm. cool to see Tennessee fans travel the way they did. So, but yeah, I would have loved for Boise State to have been able to host a playoff game. But again, just no reason that Oregon, the clearly top team in the nation all season long, shouldn't be able to play Arizona State or Boise State their first game. Like,
yes. Yep.
Unreal. Second after draft. We're going to take some quarterback talk here. So
we are.
So the after draft, they just won a game, no longer hold the first overall pick in the draft. The Raiders need to swing big for Cam Ward because of AFC West talents like Herbert and Mahomes.
Yeah, so the question here is, you need to push for the high ceiling mm-hmm. to be able to compete with Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes. And I am going to draft this with a very, very strong caveat.
He doesn't play right away?
Absolutely. Positively, under absolutely no circumstances, play Cam Ward year one. I don't care how many quarterbacks get hurt in front of him. You do not put him on the football field year one, period. Flat out. Not happening. Can't happen. He will end up like Zach Wilson if you do that. 100%. There's no question about it. He's right now Zach Wilson.
He is. That's my comp.
That's the comp.
Can't play in structure.
Big time arm. Can't play in structure. Will make some of the most boneheaded decisions of all time. And Wilson got away with it because he played at BYU mm-hmm. and his receivers were 6'4", and he just threw it up and they went up and got it.
BYU was also in the Mountain West at the time that he was still in school.
Yes, BYU was in the Mountain West at the time. Cam Ward is a turnover machine at the college football level. He is an unbelievably entertaining 50 college football player.
College fumbles.
An unbelievably entertaining college football player. But he needs a long runway at the next level. And part of this is also, you have none of the environment to help him succeed. And so for me, like, the best bet would be to build the foundation of your football team offensively and defensively, and then get a quarterback in 26. But we know teams don't want to do that. They don't want to wait. They don't want to build the foundation around the quarterback first if they feel like they have the quarterback there. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a mistake to draft him because of that, because I don't think that they will sit him. I don't think they will give him that runway. But I'm going to draft that you need a talent in the AFC specifically, like Cam Ward, if you want to compete with the likes of Herbert, Mahomes, and Denver, who has the foundation, has the environment, has the coach to be able to have a quarterback who lacks that freakish high-end talent, but can efficiently lead your offense to wins in the AFC.
Yeah. I'm going to daft this, that the Raiders need to swing on Cam Ward for a lot of the same reasons that you said, but I think it is potentially catastrophic to just take a quarterback because you think you need one and take one that has high-end tools just because you think you need one. And luckily we've kind of seen this in 2022 where like people are like, no, you have to take Malik Willis because he runs a 4.5 and because he has a big arm. And the NFL said like, do we? And he got around three. I don't think Cam Ward's going to fall that far because I also just think there's a bigger need. We saw four quarterbacks go out. Well, I guess we saw six quarterbacks go out the first round last year. But there, I mean, there's still four teams in the top five that need quarterbacks and the top six that need quarterbacks this year. So I do think the need is – the demand is a little bit higher this year where teams are going to do that. It's been 5 years, man, and three different teams.
And I think the other thing is it's just these two dudes. There's nothing else in this class. Nothing else in this.
Well, I mean, we'll see what Cade does. I would be really shocked if Klubnik came out, but I do think the team would probably take a shot on Klubnik if he came out. I mean, it's been 5 years, man. Three different teams, and he's still doing the same stuff everywhere he's been. And like to an extent, like you can say like, oh well, if you can develop talent at the NFL level, and I agree, but like, I think everything about Cam Ward's game needs rewired. And that's pretty rough. Mm-hmm. That's really rough. The only time that he operates in structure is when he's ripping RPOs, man. Like for the most part, it's just when he's ripping RPOs. And so I think it's potentially catastrophic for a specific Cam Ward just to draft Cam Ward to have a high-end toolsy quarterback. When you could, like, one of Mason Graham, Will Johnson, or Abdul Carter is going to fall in your lap. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what Cade Klubnik decides to do. Again, I'd be shocked if he went back to school. But honestly, man, like, where I have Cam Ward graded out, and Cam Ward's one of those guys, like, sometimes people will talk about a prospect, and it makes you go back and reevaluate and say, like, did I miss something? I have a low third-round grade on Cam Ward, and I'm going to stick to that. Like, that's just going to be where I'm at on the table with Cam Ward. And to the point where, like, if Klubnik came out, he's got just as good of tools. He's more athletic than Cam Ward. I think he's a little more accurate in football. The decision-making in the Clemson offense under the Riley brother there is – Garrett Riley is still a little juvenile, but it's a college offense. If I graded Cade Klubnik out, if he did declare, like there's a chance he might be QB2 for me because that's how strongly I feel about Cam Ward and just completely needing to rewire his game at the next level.
Yeah. I mean, we saw something in my opinion, for me, it's kind of the Zach Wilson thing, but it's a lot of the Malik Willis thing too, where there's there's going to be a lot that he needs to learn. And we saw what happened with both Zach Wilson and Malik Willis playing early in their careers. And it looked like Malik was on fire for two games with the Green Bay Packers. And we want to see more of him in the future to see if he's able to develop, because he's got the tools to do it. But I do think at the end of the day, if this is something that teams are going to, again, chase the dragon with Cam Ward, and you're going to probably end up getting burnt by the fire. But let's move on to the third daft or draft, Corey. And that is Jihad Campbell, the linebacker for Alabama, is linebacker one in this class, even if we designate Jalen Walker, Georgia linebacker, edge rusher, as a linebacker.
I'm going to draft this. I'm going to draft it because you don't have to project a whole lot with Jihad Campbell compared to Jalen Walker. And I just think that Jihad Campbell's a more fluid athlete than Jalen Walker is as well. Like, is Jalen Walker more explosive on a linear plane? Probably a little bit. Jihad Campbell's still extremely explosive on the vertical plane. But Jalen Walker's ability to just like stop, start, stick his foot in the ground, go, trigger downhill out of no movement, like out of a spy. Like, that's where the majority of his sacks come from, is him in a spy situation and just triggering downhill. Like, that stop, start, that explosiveness is rare. And it's why people love Jalen Walker. And I think it's correct to project him as a linebacker at the next level. But by projecting him as a linebacker, you can project a lot of his football acumen, I think, really well, because he's a really smart player, and you can see that. So I don't worry about, like, how will his eyes develop? How will he be able to scrape and not over pursue and kind of the learning curve in that regard? But where I do struggle to project is, like, can this dude backpedal? Can this dude carry up the seam? Can this dude change directions and match in the slot if he has to get out there? And those are all things that Jihad Campbell has done and does at a high level at Alabama. I mean, I watched that LSU game, and I saw him break up a pass on Kyron Lacy in the slot, in the end zone. Like, he matched with Kyron Lacy, and he knocked the ball away. I've seen him robot out and carry vertically up the seam. I saw him in that game flip his hips and change directions like a freaking safety. And so, like, as far as coverage ability goes, and then even in cover three as a hook defender, I've seen the wits where he hits 10 yards in depth, stops carrying number three. He's carrying number three. Passes off, stops at 10 yards on the dot, and feels out a backside dig, eats that up, triggers downhill, and makes a tackle on Nico Yamavalea, who's trying to scramble because Jihad Campbell erases basically his number three receiver and his number one receiver in the same concept. So I think he feels out route concepts really well, has a good idea of what he's going to be attacked with in peripheral based on what the guy he's faced with is running, the route that the guy he's faced with is running. Man, as far as a coverage linebacker goes, I don't know the last time I've seen one this good. Like, I really liked Pete Warner out of Ohio State in 2021 as a coverage linebacker, and how fluid of an athlete Pete Warner was out of Ohio State. But Jihad Campbell's a way better athlete coming downhill than Pete Warner was. And is a way better tackler than Pete Warner was as well. My issue with Jihad Campbell is, and this is where Jalen Walker laps him by, I would say, a full lap, it's his physical play strength. I still think that I struggle with Jihad Campbell's ability to work through contact, Jihad Campbell's ability to get his frame clean when blockers get into him. But that doesn't translate to him, like, as a tackler. He's only missed 5% of his tackles this year. Like, he's a very firm tackler. But the play strength is where I want to see a little bit better from Jihad Campbell, given that he is 6'3" and 230 pounds.
Yeah. Absolutely slamming the table and drafting this. He is the best linebacker in this class. And I think when we look at it, we've seen guys like Jack Campbell go 18th overall. Mm-hmm. Before that, we saw Quay Walker go 22nd. Devin Lloyd went 27th. And Devin Lloyd was a good coverage player as well. Mm-hmm. I do think, who's the NC State kid that ended up going? Peyton Wilson. Peyton Wilson, for me, is the best linebacker that I've seen over the last couple of seasons. He obviously had the injuries and things of that nature, but he was a freak athlete. He was fantastic in coverage. And I think he's the best linebacker that we've seen in the past couple of years. But this kid has everything that you want, plus the ability to come down and play Sam and be
a legitimate pass rusher as well. This season. Yeah.
Yes, he's got legitimate pass rushing chops as well. Now, when I watch him and I watch Deontay Lawson together, they use Lawson a lot more as a blitzer through the A-B gap, and Lawson is really good in that respect, and I think Campbell could be a little bit better. But when you were talking about the play strength, and I don't see it quite as much when he is at the second level, playing as a linebacker and coming downhill and stacking and shedding. And he's not like an old school linebacker. He's not Maurice Leafau out there stacking guys, you know, coming to the second level. But I did see that lack of natural play strength on the edge as an edge setter. You see that even with the length that he has, even with the outrageous muscularity and density that he has, because he is 245 pounds. He is a legitimate X-frame. I mean, his body is one that bodybuilders would die to have. That's the kind of small waist. He wears the crop top all of the time because he shows off his six-pack all the time. And he should do that. But what you said about his ability in coverage, and it's not just his ability in coverage, but for me, it is – I like Deontay Lawson's tape better over the summer. I thought he was a better football player over the summer. I loved the upside of Campbell coming into the summer. And then just a lot like Abdul Carter playing the edge for Penn State, you saw him just get better and better and better throughout the year. You saw him get more comfortable in coverage, get more intent in coverage. I talk about that a lot when I talk about those Notre Dame guys. He is fantastic. And then like you said, he has the fluidity to kind of excel in that area. I think he's the best linebacker in the class. He is, from a potential perspective, arguably the best linebacker that I have seen in a long time. Like I said, I think Peyton Wilson was a better linebacker. I thought that Peyton Wilson had the kind of closing speed and fluidity that kind of combine somebody like Jalen Walker and Jihad Campbell. But obviously the injuries are the reason why he went so low, because his injury history was atrocious.
Yes.
When you don't have shoulders as a linebacker, I'm going to struggle to love you. Even though Peyton Wilson got a first round grade from me, I do think that you could see Campbell be the highest drafted linebacker since Devin White. And on the conversation of LB1 here as well, Jalen Walker scares the crap out of me. I think that there is a lot of Devin White in his game, as he might just be better saying, hey, like giving him that Bobby Wagner role in his second stint at Seattle, in his stint at Los Angeles, where you just let him get downhill and make plays coming downhill, use him as a run blitzer, you know, run some three-man fronts or four-man fronts and have an end man on the line drop back into the flat and just let him play forward and let him be disruptive in the run game. A little David Long-ish, but obviously a more high-end athlete. Because David Long, when he was with Tennessee, he was making plays behind it at the line of scrimmage with consistency. And I think that's where you have to use Jalen Walker. You have to use him as a spy and let him let that explosiveness delete space and let him make plays behind the line of scrimmage, because I have not seen it in coverage. There are times where I think that even with his athleticism, he really struggles to flip and carry crossing routes. And so for me, I just don't think in that defense, he's there mentally where I want to see him. And that is one thing that when we look at college to the professional level, when it comes to linebackers, that's a big difference, because you're going to see way more spot drop cover three, cover four, cover two at the NFL level than you do in college, where it's a lot more read, react, kind of float back a couple of yards, but there's no intent to your coverage in college where there is in at the NFL level. So I think it's going to be a learning curve. I think that you should use him as a hybrid player in year one, see where he kind of fits best, because I think he's a linebacker, but he might get to the NFL level, find his hands a little bit, and be a full-time edge rusher, because he has the physical potential to do that as well. I just think there's a lot that scares me about him at both positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I question if he has the ankles to be a full-time edge rusher.
That's also fair. But also, Mikel doesn't either.
Well, that's also
true. Or if he does, he doesn't show it. Anyways,
yeah.
Jihad Campbell is linebacker one. I think it's by a decent margin. I think he's a really freaking good football
player. I do too. I think his eyes are still a little green, and I'll give him that as well. But like, it's almost like a bell curve with linebackers, and I think Jihad Campbell's like, you don't want to be on either end of the bell curve. Like, you don't want to be too late, or you don't want to be way too early, like way too over aggressive. And he's somewhere in that middle. He might not always be at the top of the bell curve, but he's at least somewhere in the bell curve where he's in position to make a play, whether he's scraping on time as quickly as he needs to, or if he's getting a little over aggressive. I think that's okay because he's still inside that bell curve and he's not way over pursuing and like a cat with chasing a laser pointer. Who was the Alabama linebacker from a couple of years ago? Oh, Henry To O. Like that was a cat chasing a laser pointer. He saw ball and he was running everywhere. Like, that's somebody who's an example who's on the way more aggressive side of the bell curve. As long as you stay inside the bell curve, stay inside your fit, you can be a little late. You can be a little over aggressive as long as you're not taking yourself out of the play. And I think that's with Campbell's eyes, I think he's inside that bell curve, even if they're not 100% there yet.
Yeah.
As well. So yeah, I'm all aboard Jihad Campbell as well. I'm sure we're both going to talk about him a little bit later in this week as well. So, definitely a linebacker one in this class.
Yep.
Again, all right. I would consider, like, where would Sonny Styles feel if I sat down and I wrote him up, if I knew he was declaring, where would he come in? Because again, he is 6'3" and 220 as well, and a heck of an athlete, and a converted safety. So like, he's got feel and coverage and he's got all of that as well. But he's 19 years old, so I don't think it's happening. But yeah, Jihad Campbell, linebacker one.
And that's all. That is it. That is Daft or Draft, another episode down. We will be taking tomorrow off. We will be back on Friday with our players 16 through 20 on our big boards. Tune into that one, guys. It's going to be fun. Things are going to start really getting a lot different between our two boards. So make sure that you guys tune in on that. And don't forget, he's Corey. I'm Dalton. I love you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.